You're listening to another great podcast in the MyMac Podcasting Network.
Hey, Melissa.
Hey, Elisa.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going. I think I have better weather than you do.
Well, it's about 71 degrees right now, and the landscapers have started. But are you ready to talk for episode 435 of Geekiest Show Ever?
No, but I'll make it up as I go along like I normally do.
Okay. I got to tell you something. As listeners probably already know, we talk forever before we hit the record button, but I did not tell you this.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
I pulled out this morning. Let me see if you can see this. This is my iPod video, 60 gig.
I think I have the same one.
I charged it up.
See, can you see it back behind my head there?
Yes, I do.
It's over.
Yep, I can see it.
Oh, so you do see it. My little teeny tiny Apple shrine.
Yeah, I charged it up and listened to some music because I'm laying in bed last night, not sleeping, par for the course. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I don't have any wired headphones anymore because everything is Bluetooth.
Except for the ones that are on your head right now.
I don't know if this would work, but I mean, buds, to listen to iPods and things, because I have a couple of them. And I'm thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do? I don't have any. And then I looked, I'm like, oh yeah, here's a set right here. Uh-huh. This is the only set I have. So I charged up this iPod. And when it finished, I put this in. The right earbud doesn't work, but that's okay. And I'm just listening to the music. And the thing is, there's no volume control on this. On the earbuds. There's no volume control, and there's no volume control on this. Not that I could find. It only gives me a volume control of how loud it can go. Like, don't let it go up to a certain amount. And then I would increase the volume, and then it would go back to where it was. It was like, I couldn't find how to do this.
I don't remember.
But here's the problem I'm running into. I have my original iPod.
Yeah, me too. Mine's an iPod Nano.
It's a second gen. And you can't see it because it's over on the floor. It charges by FireWire.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have an electrical adapter for the FireWire.
I do. I'll send you one.
Save
that stuff.
I can't find it. This is all USB.
It's funny.
And I'm searching. I'm like,
go to Monoprice.
What happened? I must have thrown it. I'm like searching everywhere where I have all these. Oh, look, I have a USB-C to USB-C. Where'd this come from? You find all these things. I went out and bought more.
You find everything.
Yeah, I went out.
Everything else that you don't need.
Went out and bought more.
Or the things you were looking for 6 months ago.
Yeah, and I went out and bought more. I'm like, oh, crap, I already had one. So what do I do? I pulled out my 2004 MacBook, plug that into the wall. And now I've got and that had a FireWire port on it. So right now, you can't see it, but over on the floor over there is my iPod charging.
Have you tried it yet? Or is it still charging?
It's taking forever. Yeah. It's still charging. But it still works, at least as the last time I used it.
Which
is the coolest thing.
Yeah, I should. The last time I plugged that one in, it still worked. That's actually my in-laws. It belonged to my father-in-law, so. Not actually personally mine, but it's a nice little relic, and the kids like looking at it. I have it conveniently placed next to my what is that called? Is it called a princess phone?
No,
it's
not a princess. A princess was the was the wide one.
Oh, okay. That went
Yeah, with the handle went over it, as opposed to the more of a squarish. Yeah, that was a princess.
Yeah. Yeah, I should look up what the actual technical term is.
Yeah, that's
but it's the upright, old-fashioned telephone.
Yeah, the kind where you have almost looks like a
candlestick.
Yeah,
that's what they call it—a candlestick telephone. Yeah, that's what it is. I actually talked on that when I was 4 years old. It still worked when I was very, very small.
That's what they used for the party lines.
Yeah,
that's what my mother had growing up was the party line, and way back when your phone number wasn't 555-1212, it was IV 7-1212.
Yeah, there's letters in it.
I remember looking.
Did you ever talk on a party line?
No. We had a regular telephone, but I remember looking through my mother's address book, and she'd have everybody's name, address, and phone number, and it was never 555. It was IV6 or, you know, HG3,
Yeah.
Because that's the way it was.
How far we've come.
Yeah. And you didn't really deal with area codes that much.
Yeah. 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 And I remember there were places, like when I grew up in Pennsylvania, there was only a select few area codes, and now there's more area codes that they've added.
Oh, yeah.
That's population growth.
I don't know why I was having this conversation. I was having this conversation, the same conversation with someone last week about this, where with the area, there's a, my area code covers a large area of New York State. But if I wanted to call someone who's about 40 minutes away from me, I had to dial one first.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then the phone number, and it was considered not a long distance call, but a, I think they called it a toll call, maybe.
Yeah.
So you still had to pay for it, but it didn't cost you as much as a long distance phone call. So I had a friend, my elementary school friend, who ended up moving when at the end of sixth grade, and she moved about 20, 30 minutes away. We didn't call each other because it was one. So we wrote letters to each other.
Yes. That's when pen pals were popular, when they'd move away.
Like, are you kidding me? She didn't live that far away, but because it would cost each of us money to make a phone call, we wrote letters to each other.
Doesn't it just blow your mind just how much technology has changed? Even just thinking about a telephone. And now we have these little mini computers that are so powerful that they're more powerful than I think it was the Apollo mission that took us to the moon.
Yeah.
They're more powerful than a rocket. Not the rocket, but the lunar lander. They're more powerful than a spacecraft. It's mind-boggling. That's why I love keeping relics around, just to kind of look and see like how far we have come. And then, this conversation actually segues into what we'll be talking about today, which is security on your mobile phone while you're traveling. Because nowadays, just like you said, you look through your mother's little address book with the phone numbers there. Now imagine what's in your phone. I mean, my God, like there's so much content. And, some of it might be for business or personal. And I mean, you just wouldn't want that information to fall in the wrong hands. Even if it was just your own, I know a lot of people are like, oh, I don't have anything to hide. I'm not worried about it. I'm like, well, anybody can get that information and use it to impersonate you and steal your identity. And I mean, I know how that feels to have been done. We're victims of identity theft, and it was all on paper. They stole our mail. They just stole our mail, our paper mail, from our mailbox. I mean, it's a federal offense, and luckily they caught the guy. I think I've told that story several times. Thankfully, somebody came by and picked up the envelopes that the litter bug trashed, and that was his downfall, because I saved him like a good CSI watcher, put him in Ziploc bags, and they got the fingerprints. So, yep. But, that's our social security numbers out there. And so we have to be really diligent. And now with everything on your phone, my goodness, there's just so many things. And so many people, that's what I want to talk about, is that so many people store their really sensitive information. I guess they don't realize just how sensitive it could be. I've seen people store passwords in their contacts, in their digital address book, in the notes section. Really bad place for it. Sometimes those things get, I mean, think about it. It's like let's say you gave your garage code or something like that to somebody and they just stored it in their contacts. Or let's say you did trust them with one of your passwords, and I'm just totally making this up, but this could really happen. Let's say you decided to share your Hulu or Netflix password with somebody, and that password just happens to be a password that you reuse all the time. A lot of people just reuse the same password, or all they do is put the word Netflix after it. So if you say I love my dog _ Netflix or something, that becomes really easy for criminals that already have just these automated robotic scripts that run and just say, okay, let's just remove the word Netflix out of the equation, and they can get your password. It's really, really easy. And so people are just storing stuff without really thinking about how that can impact themselves or people that they care about. So we're all interconnected somehow. So that's what we want to talk about today is, you know, talking about how to keep yourself safe, at least, you know, a little bit of information that's circulating around that you just, it's good to know about. At least as you're going to be traveling and you have some thoughts about how you want to protect your phone. And, you know, you have nothing to hide necessarily, but you're a citizen that wants your privacy, and that's, you know, you deserve dignity. But the laws would say differently if they want to do like a random search. And so I guess that's what we'll lead with is one of the things that I looked up, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes so that you have it for reference, is the website, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. And we should mention, you know, we're just going to be talking about what we know from the U.S. here. But this impacts people when they're traveling because, you know, you could be, you know, a completely innocent individual. You've got no issues, no, you know, crimes or anything. And just traveling in and out of the United States through the border, you could be subject to a Customs and Border Protection or a CBP inspection. What I know so far, and again, you can read through this document. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But there are two types of searches. And they consider them to be a basic search and an advanced search. So a basic search is, you know, they'll just ask you for your phone and they'll like look at it and, you know, they might just inspect it. Like it says, it just says it's a search of an electronic device that is not an advanced. It generally entails the officer reviewing the contents of the device manually without the assistance of any external equipment. Well, that still means you've got to unlock it if they pull you over to search it. But it means that they're not going to hook it up to something and make, you know, download all the contents and make a copy of it. That's the really scary part, is just the fact that they can do that. And then that's called an advanced search. And that's where they do connect it to external equipment. And they review it, they copy it, they analyze the contents. So they're going to force you to unlock it and dump the contents out. Now, it does say that it requires reasonable suspicion of a violation of law enforced or administered by CBP or a national security concern, and then they have to get the approval of a senior manager. But as we've all experienced, it just seems like they can be like, oh, well, you look suspicious. So I don't think it's like, oh, well, we have nothing to worry about. I'd be concerned. I would be concerned. It seems like any of us could be subject to an advanced search. Just depends on how they're feeling that day. So, yeah. You are obligated, if they do require your device to search through it, you are required to provide or unlock it with your passcode. If it's locked with a passcode, they're going to make you unlock it. And again, I mean, you know, there's laws that have to be respected here and everything, but it's just something that we should probably be prepared for and not just go about our lives assuming that it won't happen to us. I think everybody should be prepared for this. So for that reason, Lisa, do you want to talk about what you discovered? We always talk about, and this is, by the way, it's not a sponsored episode or anything, but we both use 1Password. And we like the fact that they are thinking about these kinds of things, and they do have a travel mode. So this is just one way you can protect yourself. You know, even you just don't know. I mean, they could find something and take it out of context or the wrong way. And I hate to sound like a fear monger. I don't like doing that. I just think we should be reasonably cautious and just be thinking about how our information could be used. So I think you were talking about maybe deleting some apps or you know, using this travel mode.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that?
When we go to Spain, I'm thinking about on our way back, deleting social media. That could always be re-downloaded just in case they say, well, I want to see what your Twitter feed looks like. I mean, I have nothing to hide. But the point is, they might see something, like you said, Melissa, that they disagree with. I might say, it's a beautiful day, and they don't agree with me that it's a beautiful day. And that gives them cause for suspicion. So deleting social media, I'm going to delete Face ID so that you have to, so they can't just put it up in front of my face, that I have to punch it in. Now, there was something that I do see on this page, the Border Patrol. It says, If a traveler being admitted as a U.S. citizen does not present their device in a condition that allows for examination, the U.S. citizen traveler will not be denied entry into the United States based on CBP's inability to complete an inspection of their device. Mm-hmm. However, as noted above, their device may be subject to exclusion, detention, or other appropriate action or disposition.
Mm-hmm. So basically, they'll let you in or let you, I don't know. Is it only incoming? It's not outgoing, right? You can.
Yeah, you don't go through customs leaving. You just go through customs coming back in. Like, we will go through customs once we arrive in Spain, mm-hmm. because we're new to the country. Then mm-hmm. when we get back, we'll have to go through customs again.
Right. So when you're coming back into the U.S., they can basically say, oh, you're not going to lock it for us. Okay, well, fine. We're keeping your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then, then they could try to crack it or, whatever. So it's just, I don't know. It's like, just take a burner phone or something. I mean, I've heard some people, when they talk about this topic, they call it a clean device, a clean phone, meaning that, it might have your personal information on it, but it doesn't have like your whole life on it.
Right.
Like everybody else.
Like just what you need to.
Just what you need.
For where you're traveling. Just the, like your flights, your, you're going to need your email. But maybe you have a separate email account that's just for your vacation.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
So as far as 1Password, there's a couple things that you need to know. What Melissa referenced was, you can set up a vault just for travel mode. Mm-hmm. So what it does is, once you do that, it removes all the other vaults from your computers and your mobile devices, except the ones that you choose safe for travel. So with that, you can create a vault that has just the passwords you need for your travel. So like maybe to get onto your hotel, your flight, your rental car, your bank, maybe if you need to get money out. So whatever you feel is important for traveling, those can go into that travel vault, and you won't have access to your Facebook password or your, whatever other passwords you might need. You're not going to have access to them. Now, the way you turn that on is, you can't do it from the app. You have to go to 1Password.com and sign in order to do that. Now, one of the things that you may need when you sign in to 1Password.com is your secret key.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get your secret key, and we're going to put this in the show notes, there's ways of getting it, whether you're on a Mac, iOS, Windows, Android, or Linux. It just gives you the directions for 1Password 8 or 1Password 7, and it shows you where to find your secret key. You also want to download your emergency document.
Yes, make sure you have that in your safe. I've been really preaching this pretty hard to my clients, my family members. I know somebody who locked themselves out of 1Password because they were relying on Face ID so much that they actually forgot what the password was to unlock their vault. And so now they have to start all over again.
Yeah.
And it was because they did download an emergency kit, but it was for a different account that we share and not their own personal account. So that's another thing to mention, is that if you have, because maybe people don't know this, but you can use 1Password with multiple accounts. It's not just one account all the time. You might have your personal account. It might be a family account that you share with people. Then you might be given an account. Like, for example, I'm helping out a nonprofit, and the nonprofit will use 1Password. Well, they're going to have an account that they're going to give you to sign in for the purposes of managing the logins for that particular organization. So, and then like you and I, like we share an account for our podcasting stuff. So, you could have multiple accounts. So you got to make sure that you can access that stuff. And each one of them will have its own emergency kit that you should download. And it's basically a PDF. And this is what I recommend people doing, is download the PDF, print it out. If you store it on your device, like say you store it in iCloud or something, and that, let's say if you got hacked and someone found that, they wouldn't be able to get into your account with just that key. They would have to have the password that you used to unlock your account or accounts. So if you put, you know, say you annotate that PDF and you put that password on there, then that basically gives them the keys to your city. So you don't want to do that. What you want to do instead is print out that. I mean, you could annotate it, because I've done that before, like where I've annotated it, but then I delete the file. You know, I scrub that from my history. So I typically will, what I will do is print it out and then very neatly, as best I can, in the best handwriting that I can, is, or, you know, I guess you could make a separate document that, if you struggle with handwriting, for example, like maybe you want to use like New Courier New or some font that is really legible that shows you the difference between an L and a numeral 1, you know, or O and 0. Those are big ones that people struggle over. And make sure that it shows which ones are capitalized and which are lowercase and which are numbers and which are symbols. What you might want to do is create a separate document and type all of that out really neatly, because maybe it's really long, and then print that out separately and then delete that file, as long as they're not, you know, like together. But somehow, some way, get it so that, and like I say, the easiest is just take a Sharpie, print out that 1Password emergency kit, and then they give you a space to write your, they used to call it a master password. I don't like to say master password. It's just the password that you use to unlock your account. And you write that on there, and then you put that in your safe. You know, that's your hard copy, and you make sure that your family members know how to get to it, you know, thinking about digital legacy, because you're going to need that when you come back if you've, you know, locked yourself out of things on purpose. So make sure that you have, you know, at least 1 copy. I would recommend having multiple copies, and not that many, but, you know, with somebody that you trust, and store that. Make sure it's in a fireproof safe. I mean, because that is, that's what's going to lock everything for you. So have that hard copy of that emergency kit printed out and write your password on there. I would also recommend that in addition to that, because, you know, most people have their passcode memorized that they use to unlock their device. So for on a Mac, on a laptop computer, for example, or an iMac, it's the administration computer password is what it's called. On your iPad or your iPhone, it's called a passcode. So because it's, people most likely pick 4 to 6 digits, 6 would be better, but there is an option to make your passcode on your iPhone or iPad alphanumeric if you choose to. Most people don't. So I would highly recommend that you write those passcodes and passwords to unlock your devices also on that hard copy. You know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I mean, it's not unlikely for someone to have a stroke and, you know, live through it, but then not be able to remember how to access any of their devices. So sure, it's really great when you have this paper that tells you, well, here's your password to unlock your vault. Well, great, but how do I unlock the device that it's on? Now, that being said, you can log in on a website. It doesn't even have to be your device. It could be a friend's device, someone that you trust. And as long as you can get logged into the website, you know, then you can get it stuff. So, I mean, in actuality, you would, as long as you have your master, or not your vault, your unlock password to unlock your 1Password account, as long as you can get to that and another computer, and you have also saved, say, your Apple account credentials and that security key and whatever you need, plus you've put in those fields the passcodes that unlock your devices, well, then you can get into everything. You know, you wouldn't necessarily have to write those things on that paper. I'm only recommending it for a little bit more convenience, which also, you know, lowers the security risk. So, or, you know, it makes it less secure, but you have to make that decision for yourself or your loved one. And it might just be a little bit better to write those things down on that sheet of paper so that it's more, so it's a little bit easier to get into it. But just know that you're compromising the security by doing that. So that's a personal choice. But that's what I do recommend for certain people. Like, they're just not going to understand how to get, you know, onto the password and the website and log in. It would be easier if they did it through the app. So again, it's an individual choice, but that is, you know, one tip that you could use. So decide what you want to do with that for yourself. But definitely, definitely make sure that you have that hard copy somewhere else that you can get to. Otherwise, you're really up a creek without any paddles.
What I did for my secret key is I made a note in my notes app and I locked it.
Okay. Okay. And then you have the passcode that you used to lock the notes in 1Password. Right?
Right now it's Face ID, but it's also the passcode to your phone.
Right. But I thought you had to choose a passcode when you lock the note.
Let me see.
I think you also have to write that passcode down somewhere. And you can have, I mean, I haven't locked a note in a long time because I've watched more than one person lock themselves out of that note. And I don't even think you could delete it back then. Maybe you can now, but it was like somebody, and I watched somebody do it by accident, just not having, not recognizing where their fingers are at the time, not looking at what they're doing. And because it's an easy swipe to get to the padlock icon. And I've seen somebody lock themselves and then go, well, I don't know what I just did. I'm like, oh, you locked a note. Well, how did I do that? How do I get it unlocked?
Yeah, it's either what I did. It's your phone. It's your phone code. Because I took I took it off and then I put it back on again. So if I, let's see, remove.
Now, can you make I'm going to try that too. So it used to be that you had to make a separate.
Yep. So I made my note and I removed the lock. So now what I'm going to do is lock it. And then when I click on the lock, it says, okay, this note is locked. And then I hit view note and I'm pushing the phone away from me so it doesn't do Face ID. Now it says enter passcode and you have to use, it says enter iPhone passcode for notes.
And then it just unlocks that note?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to try one.
And then you just hit the lock button again to lock it back up. But that is where I have it.
So let's see, I'm swiping and I'm not even seeing the lock. It used to be that if you swiped, you could see a little lock. I'm not even seeing that now. So they must have at least changed that. So that's good.
It's the three dots.
Yeah.
Go to the three dots.
That's great. See how long it's been since I've locked a note? Yeah. Because it used to be that when you swiped, you got the little padlock icon.
Yeah. So you just open up your note, go to the three dots in the circle in the upper right-hand corner, and it says scan, pin, and lock.
Well, I just want to lock just this. Oh, I see. Okay. If I long press on the note, because it's only just this one note that I want to lock. I just called it testing. And I long press on it. And then in there, I get a pop out that says, these are the choices. Pin note, lock note, share note, move, delete.
Yep.
So I'm going to choose lock. Okay. Switch to device passcode for your locked notes. You no longer have to remember a password for your locked notes. Just use your device passcode or Face ID. Okay, so yeah, they have changed this because I was like afraid to use it because I just didn't want to. I just don't really keep a lot of. I just don't personally keep a lot of sensitive data that in my notes app. I use another app for that. I just, grocery lists and like to-do lists and stuff like that is what I put in my notes. It says access notes on any device signed into your Apple account by using the passcode or password for that device. End-to-end encryption means no one can access your locked notes without your device passcode, not even Apple. So that's interesting. So would this mean that all my notes are going to be locked?
No, just that one.
Oh, just that one.
And now okay, I just opened it up on my Mac, and it says, this note is locked.
Mm-hmm. Now it says, current notes password. Enter your locked notes password. So they're using the terminology password and not passcode. So does that mean that I could make up a password? So if I just call it password, PASSWORD, I want to see if it'll take it. And then I'm going to tap OK. Okay, now it says enter your passcode for notes. Lock notes with passcode. So then I have to use my actual, and then I can enable Face ID. Locked notes. Tap the lock icon in the toolbar or lock your device to hide the contents of your locked notes. Tap the lock icon in the toolbar or lock your device. Okay. It says updated to device passcode. use your device passcode to manage your locked notes. Okay. So now I'm going to lock my phone. And then I'm going to try to, I'm going to unlock it. And then I'm going to not look at it when I open up notes. And I'm going to try to open that note. Okay, so it's got a padlock. It says this note is locked. If I tap view note and I'm not looking at it, then it looks for face ID. I see. Okay, so, now I have the choice. I can either enter face ID again. I'm turning the phone away from me so that I can't, so it can't see me. I have a choice between either try face ID again or enter passcode. So that would mean that, okay, then I would enter my phone passcode. Mm-hmm. Aha. So, yeah, now I can open up the note. So it didn't seem to matter that I put the word password in as the password. So it makes me wonder, like, well, why did they even ask me for that then? Isn't that strange? Mm-hmm. Like, why would it just be... Because, yeah, I could just view it with Face ID. If I lock it again... And I lock my phone, if I make it so that I have to unlock my phone without Face ID, I'm just, you know, trying to like hack myself, you know? Gosh, it even saw me when I just, oh, I know what happened. It unlocked with my watch. There's another gotcha. You gotta make sure that you turn that off on your watch because it'll just unlock without your face because your watch will unlock your phone. So that would be another gotcha that I would look into. So it makes me wonder, like, why would it... Oh, I can remove the lock. I don't understand why it would ask me to set a password if it's not even going to use it. You know what I mean? Mm. I'll have to look that up. Yeah. That's just interesting. Don't you think? Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so, you know, beware of your places where you store stuff, your notes, your contacts. Don't store sensitive information in your contacts. Now, that'd be another question I'd wonder about is, what about your contacts? I mean, you have your contacts in there. Like, what if there's somebody that's in your contacts that could get you in trouble that you don't even know, you know? Yeah. Like, oh, how do you know this person? You know what I mean? Mm. Like, what would you do about contacts? Would you go through the trouble of trying to hide those?
No, because in my case, I don't know anybody. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like I know famous people or politicians or journalists or anything. Yeah. I just know Joe Average, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to be different for every person. Yeah. But I wonder what people think about if it comes to contacts. Maybe they do have a high profile sensitive contact in their contacts that they want to not... they don't want to raise any suspicion or something. So the only thing I can think of for that is if you are the type of person, like say you're a journalist or something that would be targeted, then you might want to use a separate Apple account for your contacts and then just remove that account. You know what I mean? And put it back when you get home. That would be one way around it.
Yeah.
It sucks.
There's ways around it. You can make a list of just your, say a list of journalists that you speak with on a regular basis, make that a list, mm-hmm. export the list onto your computer. If you have one, mm-hmm. export the list, delete it from your mm-hmm. phone.
Yeah.
And then when you get back, you can always re-import it back into your contacts. Because hopefully when you're on vacation, you're off the grid, you know, you're not going to be dealing mm-hmm. with having to talk to any journalists or maybe you're a lawyer, you know, that's confidential information. You can't even put that in Dropbox.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Well, you used to be able to. No.
A lot of that you can't.
Legal stuff.
You can't.
Tax stuff
you can't put like in Dropbox or iCloud or anything. Mm-hmm. That's.
I know accountants that use Dropbox. Like regularly to share files with their clients.
I mean, I don't know what the legalities are, you know, as far as being a lawyer or being a journalist or being an accountant mm-hmm. or a doctor. I don't know what the legalities are, but there's certain things that cannot go in a cloud.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And there's a lot of people that don't even use the cloud, depending on the type of job that they do. So, but they wouldn't be taking that phone with them on vacation. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it sucks that we have to think about these things, but it's a good, at least it's a good mental exercise in thinking more intently about your safety and your security. And just being more conscious about stuff that is stored on your phone. And depending on who you are, maybe you don't need to store those things on your phone. You know, but then they turn around and, like, I've read some travel articles from what I thought were pretty reputable sources. And they even said that you should. So I hear mixed things. Like, I hear some sources say you should never take a picture of your passport and your driver's license or any of your identification and keep it in your photos library. But then I've read other articles that say, no, you really should, because if something does happen to your passport or your photo ID, that you could at least, you know, get some help and you'd have a better chance of getting things fixed or, you know, getting through whatever you need to get through if you have that documentation on your phone. I mean, of course, it's not the same as the real thing. They're not just be like, okay, you have a picture, you know. No, they'll.
But if you're in another country, you're on a cruise or whatever, and your passport is stolen, which has happened, at least if you have a picture of it, you go to the U.S. Embassy, you can get some help. You have nothing. Yeah, you have nothing to prove that you are you. At least you have that on your phone, and they can look at the picture and go, okay, and they can ask you a couple of questions like, where do you live? And
Yeah.
I don't keep it in photos, I keep it in one password.
That's a good idea.
I have my front and back driver's license. I have front and back Tom's driver's license. And I have my passport and I have his passport in case anything happens. Now, they also recommend when you're cruising to have paper copies with you of your passport. I have not done that.
You have actual photocopies?
Actual photocopies. Yeah. They say you should keep actual photocopies. I do not.
In addition with the passport.
Yeah. I do not do that. But that's what...
Yeah, because if your passport gets stolen in the photocopies with it, so I guess you're talking about like packing them in separate
But this places. Could also be from people who don't understand 1Password, don't understand password managers. It could be, okay, in some ports, when you go back to the ship, you need to show your passport in addition to your key card. So rather than bring your actual passport, leave that in your safe and bring a copy... I see. That you can show security. I haven't had that in years. Normally, when we're coming back onto the ship and we're going through security, we have to show them our key card. Occasionally, we've had to show our driver's license, but I always take my driver's license with me.
Okay.
Yeah. Occasionally, we've had to show it, but mostly it's just and we just show them the key card just to prove that, yes, we are passengers on this ship. Especially when there's more than one, that makes sure that you're going to the right gate. So if you're in a Royal Caribbean and there's also a Carnival, you don't want to end up on the Carnival side. You're on the proper side. So it's more for that.
I think nowadays, just the way things are, I would make the photocopy. I would take it with me. You know, even just to fold it up or something or laminate it.
I have it on my phone, so I'm not really not worried about that. But now that you have your secret key, you're on 1Password. Now, Melissa, I want you to open this. I want you to play along.
Yep. I'm playing along. Okay. I'm logged in. I just got logged out. I got to log back in again.
So you log in.
All right. I'm logging back in.
So how to use travel mode. What you're going to do is you're going to create another vault.
Okay. A new vault. Now, question, is this only for people in the family's plan? Can people that have an individual plan do this?
Sure.
Kind of think they can. Okay.
Actually, you don't
need. Yeah, you can create multiple vaults.
You don't even have to create a new vault if you don't want to, but I don't want to screw around with something.
Right.
So exactly. I created one just called Travel, and I threw a couple of passwords in there. So again, there are directions on 1Password that are really clear. One thing you have to make sure, you can go into 1Password on your phone. And you can say, okay, so my private and...
Now, I just turned on... So I created a travel vault and I clicked the button that says safe for travel.
Okay.
Turn off to remove this vault from devices during travel. So I'm going to view the vault and I'm going to like just put some of my... I have like demo, you know, practice things that I'm going to put in there. So I'm going to go to my demo and I'm just going to make a copy of this demonstration one. I'll take a couple of them.
Now, the first thing you have to do, you skipped a step. Once you log on, you have to go to your name in the upper corner, and you have to choose My Profile.
Oh.
So okay. once you're on that, My Profile page, then you go to Travel Mode. And it says, turn on to remove vaults from your devices. So you turn that on. And then you'll see in the corner, it says Travel Mode. So then when you go back.
Back to all the vaults. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says Travel Mode now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to look at it on my phone because now it should be in Travel Mode.
Okay, that did work then. Okay. When I look on my phone, all that shows me is my Travel Vault.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So on 1Password, though, I can still see all my vaults.
Yes. But yeah, that's like scary at first. It's like, oh, where'd everything go?
Well, no, I can still, no, on 1Password on my computer, on 1Password.com, I can still see all the different vaults.
Yeah.
The one that says travel has a little airplane on it. So I hit refresh, thinking maybe all it'll do is show travel. All my vaults are still showing. So I'm just clicking on a random vault and nothing pops up. Which is a good thing because now it's basically it's hidden. So it's letting me know that vault is there, but there's nothing showing. I like the way it is better on iOS because it's not even showing me that anything else is there other than the travel.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So,
yeah, so now I'm going to flip it back. I'm going to switch the switch back off. Now it says turning off travel mode.
Yep.
And now, wow, that was fast. And I have thousands of things in here. Holy crap. That was really fast. Everything's back.
Yep. That's all just amazing. Populated.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. But you have to have an internet connection in order to be able to do this.
Correct.
And it should be a really safe one, too.
Yeah. So,
it's encrypted as it travels back and forth.
Though, yeah. So, this isn't something you're going to be doing if you're on a plane with no Wi-Fi.
Yeah. And you got to plan this ahead of time. This is part of your travel preparations. Yeah.
And the directions are on the 1Password website. It's just one page. It's super easy. Just follow what they say and you'll be fine. And it also shows if you have a business account, how to work that for business.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
And one, like Melissa and I have said, you know, only 3 or 4 times before, 1Password is, I don't know how you live without it. And they're also really good about getting back to you. If you have a question about something, you're unsure.
They sure are.
They get back to you very, very quickly.
Very quickly, yes.
And then they'll follow up with you. Did it work? Are you okay? You know, have any more questions?
I wonder what other, I'm just going to look quickly, like what other password managers have travel mode? That's just going to give me all of like the best password managers. Let me look up and see if maybe like Bitwarden, for example, people have trouble when they're accessing accounts from Bitwarden when traveling. And they're just talking about the type of authentication. It's not geofence like 1Password. Yeah, I noticed that too. 1Password now has additional features in it that deal with geofencing. There's not a, doesn't seem to be like an easy, like, yes, it has it or anything. They don't, let's see. Okay, so, well, oh, travel mode is, that's the community forums. It's not popping out at me.
One thing I want to mention about 1Password is you can go on the home page and click the little gear, and then it will open up that one particular vault, and you can click on Safe for Travel. It's not going to eliminate the other ones until you go into your profile and turn on Safe for Travel.
Mm-hmm.
All that is doing is letting 1Password know when I turn on the master switch of Safe for Travel, this is the one vault I want to include.
Well, under the tools and features for the personal plan, there's nothing popping up about anything that has to do with helping you travel safely. So at least it's not something that they have on their bit. I'm looking on the Bitwarden page. So maybe some of the other competitors have it.
Some of these other ones, though, that are free, I don't know. For something as sensitive as our data,
Yeah.
I wouldn't go. And wasn't it, was it LastPass that kept getting
it's
hacked?
It's like the equivalent, for me, when I have ever tried other password managers, it's the equivalent of using a hand crank for your flashlight instead of like batteries or, you know, like trying to get electricity to your home and you're using a well and like a wheel. Versus, or just like, you know, it's like you're hooked up to a bicycle and okay, I need to turn on the lights. I want to watch TV. All right, kid, get out there, get on the bicycle so I can watch TV, or, you know, let's feed the hamster wheel. That's what it feels like, you know, comparison. Like, just use a password manager, like, use a good one. I'm looking on Keeper. Let's see. Don't see anything that pops out that like, hey, we offer this feature. The user's guide. I know Keeper's a pretty nicely designed one. I've seen it in action. And let's see. They've got extensions. All the other stuff that 1Password has. You know, a lot of similar things. I'm looking in the guides. But I don't see anything about traveling. And it's going to give me an AI answer. Great. Cannot be found. Answer cannot be found for your question. I just searched travel mode. I'll do all content. So, yeah, nothing readily available. So that's interesting.
Just get 1Password, yeah. People.
Yeah, just get 1Password and be done with
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that was handy.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that.
And, before we wrap up for the episode, I just have a little something to share with listeners. As you may have noticed from the show title, this is the last episode of Geeky Show Ever for Melissa and I. Since my husband's retired and we're traveling more, and Melissa has gotten busier with more clients and increased family commitments, making it harder for us to schedule time to record, 3 hours time difference isn't making it any easier for us. So after some discussion, we decided it was time to pass the reins on to other hosts. It's possible we might come back in the future, but we encourage you to give podcasting a try. If you're interested or have questions, reach out to Tim Robertson at publisher@mymac.com. You can find his email in the show notes. Tim created Geeky Show Ever way back when. And he's been supportive of every host the podcast has had, and we want to publicly thank Tim. We also want to
thank you.
Yeah, we also want to shout out to the listeners who gave us feedback, including Andrew, Bob, and Kurt. Thanks to all of you who have listened to our stream of consciousness over the years, and we appreciate each and every one of you. Anything you want to add, Melissa, before we sign off?
Well, I say maybe when the time changes again, we'll do some episodes in the future. We're always available to, you know, hang out and be guests or panelists or something like that. But the regularity has just gotten really challenging.
Yeah. So. I mean, if there aren't new hosts and, you know, the stars align, mm-hmm. maybe we can come back now and then. But if mm-hmm. there's new hosts, then we say, you know, go for it. Mm-hmm. Good luck to you.
We're just retiring is all. Just retiring.
Yeah.
And people who are retired know how busy that is. So
yeah, like I said a few minutes ago, we're traveling more. And traveling mm-hmm. season has begun.
But Elise and I are going to be keeping in touch on the download, just not podcasting about it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So if you want to know what we're up to individually or together, you'll have to reach out to us. And we've told you a million times how to do that. So.
With that, for the final time, I say thank you so much for listening, and please stay safe.